listening to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch, episode 559. My name's Dave, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Wayne, as we continue our examination of the post-apocalyptic series Fallout. And I don't know if you ran across this in your reading, but I got an email, probably from Prime, but Fallout is the second most streamed show on Prime ever.
Really?
What was number one?
Hold on. The Marvelous Miss Maisel?
No.
No. The Boys?
Nope.
No.
You're close.
It's Gen V.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, right.
Rings of Power.
Oh, yeah. So we got both. So we are basically the Golden Touch.
We are.
Someone should tell the people at Amazon about this and, you know, maybe give us some money and stuff.
Right. Now, despite the fact that she continues to want to see the next episode each week, my wife had to pull out her Latin quote today when I told her about this. There's no accounting for taste. Like, okay. You don't have to watch it if you don't want. No,
yeah, don't be snarky like that. If you, you know, watch it or not. I don't need your lip.
Exactly. Anyway, all right. We want to thank our Patreon supporters, Bert, Joe Herbers, aka Cincinnati Joe, Fred in the Netherlands, Mike, Cindy, Mark, Travis, Richard, Alan in England, Chris, Suzanne. Thank you guys so much. Helps defray the costs of Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Sci-Fi TV Rewatch at gmail.com is the way you can reach us if you want to send us feedback, ask a question, whatever. So, all right, now, for what I'm watching, it's going to be all over the place. First of all, what I'm reading, I started the second book in, I forget what the actual trilogy is called, the book that follows Three Body Problem. I think it's called The Dark Forest or something. I forget. But I'm only about 35 pages in. And I will say, number one, having read the first book one and a half times and seen the series, yeah. I have a pretty good understanding right. of what's going on. So it makes it easier that way. Some of the material from the Netflix series is actually drawn from the second book, which, okay, fine, whatever. But one of the challenges reading the novels is all of the names are Chinese names, and it's really difficult for me to keep track of who's who. I almost need like a little note sheet, but I'm always reading on my Kindle in bed, so that wouldn't do me much good anyway. Now, the other thing, and I'm ready for the hate emails. Guys, get your email ready because I know it's coming. Despite the fact that I'm a prog rock guy from way back.
Oh, here we go.
Love early Pink Floyd. I never listened to The Wall.
Are you effing kidding me?
I know. Okay, so.
Dude, I was 6 years old when that came out, and I listened to The Wall all the time.
So for those of you that don't know, I'm sure there's one or two of you out there, 1979, I believe, I could be wrong, I think it's a 79 double album when they used to make albums.
Maybe it was. I was in fourth grade, so right, I wasn't now, six. I was now, probably 8 or 9.
Okay. Now, either I ran way. Across, you know, greatest album ever. What I'm like, all right, you know what? I need to listen. So I'm one and a half sides into it.
Uh-huh.
I'm ducking for cover.
Dude.
I don't
just,
get it.
Just rip off that Band-Aid.
I mean, there's some, you know, Another Brick in the Wall, great song, you know, all three parts. I've only gotten to the first parts one and parts two, but
oh, you've heard that song before. Though, right?
I have, but to really listen to it with headphones and you know, really take it all in, it really is a masterpiece.
Great song,
but the rest of it, and I Bro. Get it. Okay, I mean, God. I get that it's a rock opera. I get that you know, it's telling this really emotional story. Fine, I get all that, but it. Again,
I am gutted right now.
I mean, it's no, me over it's here. No Tommy. It's no Genesis Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. I mean, that's a little before your time. I guess you were about four then. That came out in 74, I believe.
Yeah.
But anyway, now the other thing we've paused. I know.
You're right. Tommy is probably one of the best all-time rock operas. And I don't even know if I would consider The Wall a rock opera per se. I mean, they did make it into a movie, but which is actually a really good movie. I think it's one of the original, concept albums. I would probably call it better. But dude, I am just alarmed, amazed, and shocked right now, Dave.
Now I'm going to keep going. I mean, I'm familiar with Comfortably Numb.
Comfortably Numb. Yeah.
So I'm familiar with that. I was actually in a band that played that song. So I haven't gotten to that yet on the album. My wife and I have paused Black Sails, which is not my call, but it is what it is. We finished up this Irish legal drama called Striking Out on Acorn via Hoopla, and then we had to resort to some nefarious methods to see the second season. This woman leaves her bachelorette party because she misses her fiancé and finds him having sex with another lawyer in their firm. She calls off the wedding, leaves the firm.
Wait, were they having sex in the firm?
Yeah, no, in his apartment.
Oh, the lawyer's from her firm. Okay. That's even cheekier than...
So she takes on smaller, a lot more meaningful cases. Maria Doyle Kennedy, we know as Mrs. S.
Maria Doyle.
Yeah. And she was...
From The Commitments.
And she was also in... The Tudors, right? She was Henry VIII's first wife in that. So she appears in season two. Amy Huberman is the lead character, who's this Dublin lawyer. Really good, but two seasons ends on a pretty major cliffhanger, and it's like, that's it. We're done. No, we're not Netflix, but we're just as bad. So anyway, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I mean, I can barely talk still from the bomb you just dropped on me. About The Wall, I'm still reeling from that. But I'm going to try and rally here. So I've been actually reading a book for ages now, called Tree of Smoke. It was about Dennis Johnson, actually. It was about Vietnam, basically. And it's not like, there's actually no like war scenes, quote unquote, in it. It's just really kind of the impact that the war had on people at the time and then their lives after it. I know I'm not selling this book at all, but it was a pretty good book. It took me ages to read it, though, just because, I don't know. You know what I did that I was able to really knock out that book? I probably read months reading the first half of it and maybe like a week and a half the second half. I got a digital copy from the library from my phone. Well, so now I could just – sorry, go ahead.
No, what drew you to that subject matter to begin with?
Honestly, I got it as a Christmas present.
Okay.
It was like even in a gift exchange type situation. It was like our English department. And one of the members of our English department said, here, my husband said you would like this book. So there was a lot of responsibility there. Okay. But I hadn't read it for a long time. It was just, it constantly been getting pushed down on the pile. And I'd get new books, get books for Christmas, birthdays and stuff. And finally, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to read this thing. Mostly, I felt out of duty at first. But then it turned out to be a pretty good book. So,
Because obviously that war is not really your generation as it is mine.
Yeah. Well, it was our dads, and not my dad, but a lot of guys I grew up with, their dads had served in Vietnam.
Sure, sure. So, all right, what else?
I finished Louder Milk because when I first saw it, Netflix was like, new series, Louder Milk. I'm like, sweet. And I watched it, and it had like, three seasons. I'm like, cool. And then it kind of ended, and it didn't end to end, right? There's still more story to tell, obviously. And I realized, like, the last episode was in, like, 2019 or something, and that there probably will never be a season four, just because the – I guess it was on – I can't remember what service it was. Oh, like A&T – like, AT&T had a streaming service for a while. Did you even know that? I didn't know that. I didn't know that either. But apparently it was on this AT&T service, and then AT&T service stopped, and then Loudermilk stopped. And then you know, Netflix finally picked it up just a couple months ago, you know, very recently. So I don't know if there's really talk out there for the new season, but I really ended up liking that show a lot. At first I wasn't sure about it, but it ended up being really good. And like I said, like kind of like really touched on some really kind of good human emotions in there. And Brian Regan, who I had heard on the radio because I have Sirius XM, and I listen to Netflix as a joke occasionally, and Brian Regan's a stand-up, and his stuff is very funny. So I'd heard his stuff a lot. I'd never seen him. And then I realized, you know, I'm watching this, that guy's voice sounds very familiar. And it turned out it's Brian Regan. He was great. His part in there he's probably one of the funniest people on the show. So it's cool. I would recommend.
All right. Ready to move on?
Yeah. Well, I was just say really quick, Discovery, I think, is kind of killing it right now. It's doing really good. Okay. I'm really enjoying Discovery, but that's it.
All right. Well, let's get to Fallout, Episode 3, Season 1, titled The Head, written once again by Geneva Robertson-Dworet and Graham Wagner, directed by Jonah Nolan. Series was released April 10th, 2024 on Prime Video. So we get like basically four different stories. And the first in that opening scene is, I guess we could safely say it's the ghoul's origin story via his, you know, base character of Cooper Howard. I love how they, you know, the giant all capital, you know, heavy typeface, the beginning. Right. And, you know, we figure he's on the movie set of a Western, which is, of course, what he is. But it's interesting because...
Well, at first, you know, you're not 100% sure because the camera's in kind of tight. You don't really see, like, the fake scenery behind him. And so we're like, oh, the beginning. So is this like... Because the last time we checked in on Cooper was the apocalypse was happening. Right?
Okay.
He was riding away on his horse as L.A. was getting nuclear bombed. So... I don't know. You're probably a better watcher than me and had to figure it out right away. But when I first saw it, I thought, we're picking up from where we left off. This is right after the bombing, and now Cooper's already kind of breaking bad.
Okay, but I see what you're saying. Okay, and after, you know, maybe 30 seconds or so, we get to the core of this scene, which is his reluctance to follow the script, which calls for his character to execute a criminal rather than arrest him. And of course, right, we're meant to pair that with, I was going to say, the person he is, whatever he is, as the ghoul 200 plus years later, who...
Because it's tough to reconcile those two characters, right?
Right. Now, if I recall correctly, at one point, whether last week or the week before, you brought up the idea that maybe the ghoul's not a bad guy. Maybe he's a good guy.
I did say I will own that.
At least for me. I'm going to go with that.
But see, that's the thing. What we do have to do, though, is reconcile the Cooper Howard from the past, who's actually a decent guy, and here he's like unsure about his character killing another person, right? It's like, that doesn't seem like me. So that guy then, who's this kind of gentle, kindly family man, and that kind of the same guy we saw in episode one. I mean, obviously, I think I said before, like 216 years or 219 years of being buried does things to a guy, probably, and he's definitely a different person. Now, what I will say, just as a cover my butt, is that I think at some point, I still kind of feel like at some point he's gonna maybe not be so bad. you know?
Well, he's not on that path. That's not to say that he can't change. And I mean, to a certain extent, we would say the same thing about Maximus, and that while there's certainly still time for Maximus to change, you know, so far I'm still not on board with Team Maximus. So I think it's Coop's director that tells him out here it's just you, your gun, and your personal code bringing order to the wild, wild west. And yeah, obviously not for a minute do we think that that is the ghoul's code of honor out here on the west. He's just interested in getting the bounty. But, dude, what's the bounty? Bottle caps?
Well, maybe, but he's got that medicine, right? That
he had that medicine.
Right, but he needs more. And so in episode one where the bounty hunters found him, he had those IV bags going down into the earth where he was buried. So I assume that was like some, I can't remember the name of the guy who, you know, would dig him up and take off part of his body or whatever. I assume that's the guy who maybe has his stuff and the guy who's making him do this mission and everything. I don't know. I still have I don't know. Like, on the one hand, I feel like, you know, he's going to turn out to be an okay guy in the end. But then I think that just sounds so cliche, right? That, you know, the Lucy's goodness will change him and melt his heart and that he'll become a good guy. Like, I don't know. But I can see him maybe ending up helping Lucy a little bit. Just, if nothing else, maybe that her goals will match up with his goals, you know.
Okay. And in that ghoul origin story, we get that flashback to Cooper shooting an ad for Vault Tech. We assume that's the origin of the thumbs up.
Right.
But in the present, when he's out in the wasteland with Lucy and they come upon that billboard for Vault Tech, which seems to bring her a certain level of comfort, he takes his gun and he shoots the entire head out, yeah, much to her horror. So I think we are certainly meant to feel as if that was certainly a regret that he had.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, I mean, but at what point? Because when he's shooting that ad on the movie set, we don't necessarily know how many days, weeks, months before the bombs fall, you know, so we don't know what transpires after that.
Well, I think it must be quite a while, because at the birthday party, the guy's like, hey, do your thumbs up thing, dude, you know?
Exactly, right. So the ad's been out
there. It's been out there enough that it's like a pretty popular thing. But you know, a couple other takeaways are, one, how that same guy, when the father says, what's Cooper Howard doing here? And the other guy's like, he's got alimony. So, you know, things don't end well with his wife, obviously. And we can maybe see, even though, like, they seem to, like, really be a nice couple, a nice family and everything, but, you know, she's making him do this. Like, he doesn't want to do this ad. He says, I've never done, an advertisement before. So he doesn't want to do it. She's making him do it. I think that would probably, that's going to cause some fissure later that ends up in them splitting up.
Okay. And one of the interesting things about the past, you know, because, you know, it's this alternate history where I guess, and I can't remember, I think one of the listeners brings this up, and I can't remember whether it was in feedback or in the Facebook group, that in this alternate history, technology just develops at a much slower pace than it has, you know, in our reality. Now, back to the ghoul and his drug, you know, I guess the key point here is, where does he get it? Who does he get it from? And how long is he going to be able to survive? Because, you know, we were just talking a minute ago whether or not he's going to end up maybe showing his good side when his desires align with Lucy's. Is Lucy going to end up helping him when he starts developing physical issues because of the lack of the drug, which I'm guessing maybe is what's going to happen. But, you know, that whole story, Lucy and the Ghoul, which sounds like a good idea for a TV show.
Right.
But, you know, we go back to that discussion we had last week. All right, is she going to carry his head in a bag, or is she going to grab it by the hair and carry it by the hair?
She goes with grabbing it by the hair.
I've mentioned before that I really love the actress Ella Purnell. I love the character. She's adorable. And there's just so many things about her that I love. I mean, the fact that her carrying a severed head around the wasteland doesn't appear to faze her in the least. You know, I'm ready for, her to start quoting Hamlet as she looks at the head.
Yeah, she really missed an opportunity there.
Yeah, but I think the people in Vault 33 will teach Shakespeare to the prisoners at some point.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, that's definitely going to bring those guys around.
Oh my God! But you know, nothing phases her. I mean, she's attacked by the gulper, keeps her cool, and shoots it. And you know what? Fine, she's handled weapons in the vault. But I think we all know. Yeah, fine. She's a good target shooter. You know, it's like I always say to Mary, it's like, you know, tons of guys can kick a football a long way. Tons of guys can hit a golf ball. Can you do it under pressure when 11 guys are breathing down your neck? You know, so the fact that she keeps her composure and shoots the gulper, I guess, again with the trank dart, but I guess that's enough to get it to release her. I mean, to me, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah,
about her.
What's more impressive is that you play golf where 11 guys attack you.
Well, yeah, combat golf, dude. Come on,
it's hardcore golf right there.
I'm telling you, CX finally bites the gulper, causing it to return to the water. She's lost a shoe, and now, you know, we see her walking through the wasteland with the ghoul. And I think at one point, doesn't he put a leash on her, a collar and a leash? Although I think the when we see her most recently in the episode, she no longer has that on. So whether that's a continuity error or he's just realized she's not going to run anywhere with only, you know, one shoe.
Right. But no water.
Right. Okay, again, you know, she's thirsty. He drinks the water and then pours it out.
Yeah.
So, that's harsh. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really poor form right there.
But then I love her line. It's like, I'm sorry. I should have just let you use me as bait in a poison river. And like, yeah. I just love her.
Well, that's also like what the ghoul, like, he's not really mean-spirited. Well, I mean, he probably is, but he's just like, I mean, Alan from England talks about, like, he is just getting from point A to point B, right? And sure. So when she's like, you know, torture is terrible, he's like, I'm not torturing you. I'm using you for bait, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, so it's not like I'm not punishing you. I'm not trying to be mean to you per se. I just, this is the way I have to achieve the goal that I'm trying to achieve. So there you go.
Right. And I think it's right before that where he hits her across the head with his gun, knocks her down. She gets right back up. But the other thing, Vault 33. I mean, we speculated whether or not we were going to get back there, and you were pretty certain we were, and you were certainly right in that regard. So do we see these vault dwellers as highly ethical individuals or dangerously naive? I'm going with the latter.
Well, I mean, I think they're both, right? They're definitely ethical because, like, for them, killing the prisoners is anathema. They're like, wait, nah, you know, like, ah, when Norm suggested, like, hey, you know, we're all running a little hot here. But certainly, like, those prisoners are not going to be rehabilitated. I feel very strongly about that. Well, I mean, it's like Lucy, right? She doesn't have that the code of the wasteland or whatever, you know. She doesn't really understand the rules, which is like kill or be killed, basically. And the vault dwellers are even more so.
Well, and that's one thing that Wilzig asks her, you know, last episode, are you willing to become what you're going to need to become to survive out here? And I think we were certainly meant to think that she probably will. How much of an actual change we're going to see in 8 episodes, again, is something I'm certainly looking forward to seeing.
But yeah, what I want to see from Lucy is that she keeps that kind of naive edge, though understanding, like she has to do, like the okie dokie as she like shoots someone right in the head or something.
Well, know, right, like. But I think we see through her brother Norm and her best friend Stephanie, and I'm guessing her cousin will go along with them. But I think those three are certainly headed towards leaving the vault to get out into the wasteland,
or taking over the vault.
Well, yeah. Or taking over the vault. And I think if there's any you know, mistaking what their intent will be, I think both Stephanie and Norm realize you can't rehabilitate them. As you said, right. I mean, the one guy says, well, it may take years. Okay, fine. But you know,
they don't have years.
Exactly. And, yeah. And you know, there are certainly some comedic scenes in this episode, watching the two guys vie for power in the vault is just comical.
Well, like all the, this means call the jury. Oh, wait, no, I meant to say, I mean, you know, it's like stuff like that. It's like, you guys are facing an existential threat and you're, you know, doing a pissing contest over who calls the adjournment to the meeting. Like,
oh, right. And you see that clearly then what transpires next, neither of them is qualified. Well, Overseer Hank would have wanted to discuss this in private. No, tell it to the whole group.
Yeah. Idiots.
We got 2 months of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not figuring in the.
And they keep talking like, "No, that's you're good."
Yeah, so you know, so I think certainly we're looking for the two, Norm and Stephanie, and probably her cousin, which I guess that would mean it's Norm's cousin as well.
Yeah,
I'm guessing Chet. They're going to. They're going to leave because, and I guess we maybe you're meant to think that the others are going to have to leave as well, or are they going to go to one of the other vaults?
Right.
Well, you know, will they go to Vault 32 and see if you know, they can scavenge whatever equipment they need to fix their water purifier?
Yeah, that would be. I would think that would be the first move. Well, I don't think they're going to leave. I think Norm has got what it takes to be the leader of the vault. I think he's okay. Going to be the next leader, because he understands actually what is going on and actually what needs to be done, where okay. No one else there does, except for Stephanie, right?
So then the question becomes, what's the point of having him take control, restoring order in Vault 33? Right. I mean, you know, I guess either...
Well, I mean, like you said, they could probably just move to 32. I mean... Might well, need yeah, a little but I tidying mean, up in there, but
well, right, but again, what's the point? Are we just going to then watch that as a separate storyline, or is there going to be another invasion from the surface?
Yeah, that's I don't a good know. Point.
So right. I'm guessing at some point
there's going to be some kind some, of convergence here, right?
Right, some or all are going to be leaving.
Yeah, that's a solid
Vault 33.
That's a solid, but I think before they do, I think. I would, if I, you know, again, I might as well swing for the fences, Dave. I've struck out so many times. I'm going to go full Mickey Tettleton on this, and I'm just going to swing for the fences or strike out and saying that I think Norm will end up taking over as the leader of the vault. And that ultimately, as you said, I think he's going to come to the conclusion that they have to leave the vault and they have to try and survive above the surface.
Okay. And I'm going to go with Hamlet, followed by Kant and lessons on morality.
Nice.
Because I'm sure that'll help. Yeah. And then, of course, Maximus. You know, I'm still loath to buy into his character as a good guy. I mean, he's certainly done some things, you know, in this episode. He didn't leave his new squire totally out to dry. But the Brotherhood contacts Titus, who's, of course, dead, Maximus impersonating him, and he quickly realizes, I don't want them.
You can't pull it off.
Right, so I'm going to smash the radio.
Yeah.
Okay.
As Alan from England says, he goes full Han Solo, and I love that comparison. That's hilarious.
Okay.
And true.
His armor's damaged, and he makes the rookie mistake of leaving it unattended. Now, I guess you could argue, well, what was his, you know, alternative? On the other hand, I'm thinking the whole time he's getting his ass kicked, I'm thinking, all right, number one, he's used to getting his ass kicked.
Absolutely.
That was part of his training.
Nothing new to him at all, right?
Right. So I'm fairly confident he's going to, you know, be making a comeback here, which of course he did. Now, I guess my question is, does he activate the armor to put the squeeze on that dude's head, or does the armor do it on its own? You know, does the armor have some sort of a sensor that it protects its knight? Which then would beg the question, it's probably linked to its knight, which would be Titus and not Maximus. So I don't know.
I don't know about that. I think he controls the arm to squish the guy's head.
Okay, but at that point, he wasn't really fully back in the arm. He was just kind of like leaning up against his arm. Okay.
Like he stuck his arm into the arm and then just grabbed that guy's head and crushed it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like a Wedham.
All right. So what do you think of Thaddeus, his new squire?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic there because Thaddeus, we did see Thaddeus, you know, kicking the shite out of him, out of Maximus in the first episode. And then now to be in this completely subservient role, which, of course, as a number of people have mentioned, Maximus is totally enjoying that. This guy who used to bully him and beat him up is now groveling at his feet. He gets that little smile on his face. Maximus is not Titus, right?
Right.
Like he first of all, he understands that Thaddeus definitely provides a threat to him. Like, Thaddeus doesn't mean to be a threat, but he is, because obviously Thaddeus can ID him and say, wait, you're Maximus. You know, you're definitely not Titus. That can be very bad for Maximus. So his first thought is, no, I don't need a squire, which of course he does, because if he doesn't have a squire, then he doesn't have someone to refill his little water thing in the back of the unit, right?
Right.
But he actually is holding his arm above Thaddeus's head. Like, he's just squished the other dude's head, and he's probably thinking, well, I could just as easily do this and be done with this guy really quick. But he doesn't. And then when they're in the river, whatever is in the water, you know, Titus, when he was in a dangerous situation, sent Maximus first, right? But Maximus tells Thaddeus, get up on the shore, right? So he protects his squire, whereas Titus used his squire as cannon fodder. And then, of course, the last thing is that he could have easily let Thaddeus be eaten. Like, his inaction was what did it for Titus, right? Well, he could have easily just done nothing once again and seen the problem with the squire taken care of. But he doesn't. He helps him. He even, like, was he saying victory, I think? He screams. I'm not even sure what he does to the gulper. I think he maybe shoves a bar down his throat or something. I don't know. But so in those three instances, he shows that he is not Titus and that he does have some kind of moral sense. There's a guy who used to beat the crap out of me with a group, like cowardly so, with a group of other people, would kick me when I'm down and beat me up. But yet he saves him like three times, basically.
Well, and it's interesting that that's almost the turning point. Thaddeus's admission that he was the one that really prompted the others to kick the crap out of Maximus. Now, granted, he doesn't know that's Maximus in there, but I think in Maximus' defense, and I think this supports what you what you're saying about him, is that the fact that he admitted this, that's enough for me. I'm going to give the guy a break, as you said. I mean, it's kind of a silly scene visually when Maximus pulls him out of the gulper's mouth, and then the gulper throws up and dies, and we see Lucy's boot and the head among the contents. Okay, fine. But I think more importantly is the fact that it's causing these two to become a little closer, even though Thaddeus isn't quite sure. Because you mentioned the scene where he's got his hand above Thaddeus's head, and you know, for a moment, I'm looking at Thaddeus, and he's not sure whether he's going to crush his head like a melon.
Right.
Now,
well, he starts saying, like, what have I done and everything.
Right, exactly. And we don't know. I mean, for a moment, maybe Maximus is thinking about, well, that would be, you know, maybe advantageous for me to, you know, keep out of the Brother of Steel's radar. But regardless, but I love, you know, because they come across Wilzek's body that's headless.
Yeah.
So who do you think did it, the girl or the ghoul? Which on its surface, and Maximus like, are you effing kidding me? And of course we know the girl did it.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
And if we would tell them that, they wouldn't believe it. Right. So again, that just a wonderful, wonderful line. So basically, whoever gets the target's going to control the wasteland. Maximus has the head as the episode ends. Well,
and they have to kill anyone who stands in their way.
Right, right. And we still don't know, nor do they, why's the head so important? I mean, we know that there's whatever he injected in there.
Right.
We just don't have any
the
idea.
The thing that
really
will allow his head to be put onto a mechanical body, and Wilzek will live again.
I guess. So anyway, what else?
Like I said, Mickey Tattleton. I'm just going for the fence, buddy. I
mean, okay.
I was wrong. I am a homebody, and so I really wanted this thing to be set on the East Coast in New Jersey, but it is not. It is without a doubt, I think we can definitively say that this is taking place in California.
Yeah, we see the Hollywood Boulevard sign. You know, yeah. There's a Hollywood, Maryland, right?
Is there?
Yeah, it's in Southern Maryland. I mean, I learned this when I was a freshman in college, oh, so many years ago, that a bunch of my quad mates were from St. Mary's County.
Yeah, and, but it might not be so because, you know, like after the Civil War, they changed a lot of those names.
Okay, well, anyway, they were from Hollywood, and it was right gotcha. Next to California.
You had a quad, huh?
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was great, dude. It was like it was a square dorm, four corners, nine right. people in each corner, nine girls, 18 girls, 18 guys.
Really?
Yeah, pretty awesome.
See, I went to a Catholic school, so it was like boys in one dorm, girls in another.
Yeah, well, they had some of those, but I was in the progressive dorm.
Cool.
So, anyway, what else?
See, oh, also, there's. I don't know if you watched the credits long enough, because
I did.
Did you see? So that they eventually show the Hollywood sign in the credits, like as it's the camera's like kind of panning back through devastated Los Angeles, and eventually it gets to a point where it pulls back, and then you see the Hollywood sign up in the hill. So it's still there.
Oh, okay. No, I missed that.
Thaddeus was a shitter on a fly farm.
Yeah. And he describes it so matter-of-factly as if, yeah, okay, cool.
He's like, that's why I'm overweight.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a career I'd be pretty talented. I think I'd be good at that. I think I could do it. It's not a positive spin for me. It's the gosh darn truth. Like, oh my God, those vault dwellers, man. They are dipshits.
Yeah, no kidding.
As they said before. I was just kind of going through here. Oh, you know, I don't really see like necessarily a spark, between Stephanie and Norm, but I could definitely see Stephanie doing a Lady Macbeth angle and getting Norm. Well, she's already doing it, right?
Yeah.
Like she's already getting him, like bending him to her will. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the with Cooper, well, first of all, I kept saying Walter Groggins, and it's Walton Goggins is the actor who plays the ghoul. But where we see Cooper where he is now, and we see where he's going to be, you know, obviously, again, like, you know, over 200 years of being undead can change a guy. But I feel, you know, I'm wondering if we're going to see that change before the apocalypse, you know? Like, we only saw him for a little bit when he was with his daughter at that birthday party. So, you know, does he become a bad guy? Like, and the thumb, that's still, like, we get now. Like, but why was he so against doing the thumbs up at the birthday party? You know? Right.
Well, you know what? Just listening to you ask that question. Well, we know, maybe a year must go by because he's divorced now and he has, you know, alimony and child support to pay. So he's clearly happy with his wife when we see him, you know, on the movie set filming the ad. But like you said, what happens in the interim that, you know, really, you know, darkens his character?
Another illusion. I'm going to throw this out at you. Did you catch the line which says, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I see, from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Famously opium addict. And now we have the ghoul, who is also, well, I don't think that's opium that he needs, but he has some kind of drug that he needs to survive. And Coleridge needs his laudanum for headaches, right? That was like the day. Oh, I got a headache. Here, have some opium. Sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, when Maximus is, well, Thaddeus is talking about the Maximus that he knew, that he believes is dead, and the actual Maximus says, well, tell me something negative about him. You know, I thought that was, because we do, right? When someone's dead, we romanticize them, right? And we say, oh, he's such a good person. They were such a wonderful person. And, you know, Max was like, tell me what you really thought about him, you know? And actually, what he really thought about was quite sweet as well, as you mentioned. Makes him go up the tree to get an apple when there's obviously not a single apple in that tree at all.
Right.
Dave, how do you demote someone who has equally disliked every job he's ever done?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's great. That's what, like, Norm is just like, you can't punish me. There's nothing you can do to me that's going to be like an effective punishment, right? Like, I've hated everything I've already done. There's nothing you can give me that'll hate any more than what I've been done before. So,
banishment.
Yeah, right. True, but they won't open the vault.
Right.
That's why he's being punished for opening the vault. They won't do that.
Banish him to 32.
Sure. The poor baby fawn gets dragged away. Saw that one coming, right?
Yeah, yeah. Remember, reminded me of Bambi versus Godzilla.
Right. I know exactly what you're talking about. That's just, oh, well, the I'm So Doggone Lonesome pops up again, the Johnny Cash song.
Yeah.
That seems to be Maximus's kind of theme song here. Which, I mean, there's better Johnny Cash songs they could have picked, I guess. But I guess it's kind of got the good, like, vibe to it for...
For Maximus walk-up music.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly better than Gunnar Henderson's.
Yeah.
I don't know what did Lucy do to the head that she said snug as a bug? Like, she's like kind of scanning it with a wrist.
Oh, she puts a tracker in the nose.
That's okay.
Right. Gotcha. So, which is, you know, definitely a pro move on her end.
Yeah, that's also a good video game move too. That's going to help him out. Communist Cadillac Bob. You're just like, someone named Cadillac Bob can't be, you know, not that there's anything wrong with being a communist. I mean, but again, that's kind of funny. Again, we talked about like how in the time period that this appears to be, right, where communism was like this terrible, terrible thing, and people were lost their jobs and were ostracized for such things. So,
right. Just I mean, like if Bob was truly a communist, he'd be driving a Prius, not a Cadillac.
Exactly. You can't drive a Cadillac and be a communist. It just goes against everything. I think they kick you out of the Communist Party if you buy a Cadillac. So, I think that I think I'm out.
Okay,
I'm good.
All right. Well, let's get to listener feedback. And Travis checks in via email. Avid listener, but admittedly a poor contributor to the ongoing discourse. I jump in and out depending on the chosen show. I'm emailing primarily about our collective friend Fred from the Netherlands and our seemingly small and shared world. In short, I recently finished watching The Expanse on Amazon and originally Sci-Fi Network.
Loved it.
Read and listened to the books concurrently, was looking for a podcast that deep dived the show while incorporating ideas from the books. Legit, the first podcast I found, about 5 minutes in, I hear our friend Fred. Yeah. Familiar voice was initially welcoming, but I quickly had to subvert a panic attack because the context of hearing Fred submitting feedback to a different show was so jolting. God, I thought he was going to say he's initially welcoming and then he told everybody, F off, you people. But
no. Are these two a-holes, Dave and Wayne? I freaking hate those guys.
Other than the funny story about a consistent contributor, I've little to add here. I'll reiterate my prior request to review, discuss the 2012 film Looper, but understand the scheduling constraints. Appreciate the consistently enjoyable commentary and comedic banter. Hope all is well in your collective ends. Travis, we are going to commit to reviewing and discussing Looper as soon as we're done with
Fallout, Dave. Yeah, well, it's so funny because, like, I know we've talked about Looper before as like a one-off doing it, and every time I'm like, I thought we'd already done Looper, and you're like, no, like, you actually went back and went through our catalog, like, wait, we've not done Looper, and then this time you said it again, I'm like, dude, I just feel like we've done Looper. You're like, we have not done Looper. So, yeah.
Right. And since I'm clearly more comfortable in the film milieu, what the hell? So, anyway, looking forward.
Now you're like been really stretching your attention span and everything. You're good. You're ready for another movie, boy.
Yep. I mean, I've seen Looper, but back in like 2012 or 2013. So, I need to rewatch it.
I think I watched it last year because it was on, I think it was on Max maybe or something. And I was like, oh, I haven't watched Looper in ages. I rewatched it and it is still good, boy. It's good. Cool. I like it.
All right. Well, let's get to audio feedback. We'll be right back.
Hello to Dave, Wayne, and everyone listening to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Alan from England here with feedback about Fallout Episode 3. Another comment about last week. Plato's cave analogy was pretty good, but that Wizard of Oz analogy, that was inspired. That was really great. Fallout, Episode 3, The Head. I like how at the start we aren't sure that Cooper's wife is in fact his wife, in how they kind of seem to meet up, but that soon seems to be fairly confirmed. And then, of course, Cooper says about that sweet or gum or whatever it is, worst thing I've ever put in my mouth. Probably stays that way for about 200 years, but then we'll see. Couldn't Lucy find any kind of container for Zilwig's head, but just has to carry it about by its hair? I was trying to work out if she was near the famous Hollywood sign. So it looks like Zilwig's injection was something solid and possibly electrical or nanotechnology or something rather than a formula or serum, which is what I'd thought, because it kind of sparks when she touches it. Maximus needs to fix that armor and avoid getting detected. That destroying the radio move was classic Han Solo, I thought. A lot of the game is indeed spent powering up and then fixing the armor after battles. Love it how that mechanic says no, she needs to charge full price, and then fixes that component in like half a second. He goes fully Denzel on those guys after taking a beating, But what else can he do? But try again. Love how that music kicks in, although the violence is still pretty gruesome. Another squire, another giant kit bag. Now it's Maximus's turn to be the knight. We see how he struggles somewhere between the morality of Lucy and the immorality of the ghoul. He's definitely enjoying the power over that squire. I love how that squire placed the drawing over where Zilwig's head would have been in order to identify him. Yep, that's definitely him. I was quite surprised that Maximus actually rescued that squire from that gulper creature. What a fabulous needle drop of in the mood. That was great. Did you notice that gulper's mouth seemed to be full of fingers? That's some weird mixed-up situation. At least they've got a head. By getting a head. Then we see the sign for Hollywood Boulevard in Lucy's position, and so probably everyone else is there or thereabouts. But of course, Maximus could have travelled in from the other coast. We don't quite know where he originated. She loses her head, but the ghoul finds her. Her golden rule doesn't seem to be working in the wasteland, which has its own rule about getting sidetracked every goddamn time. And that is classic gameplay. In order to do A, well, you need to do B and C. But to get to B, well, you need to do D, E and F. Sometimes one of the teenagers in the household will descend from their room to get food or something else and then get asked to do some chore or other. They then refer to these chores as side quests. I love how Norm is developing. He didn't seem to be much of a character at first, but he really is growing, despite his continual rating of lacks enthusiasm. He certainly doesn't lack intelligence or curiosity, and he's pretty clear about what he thinks should happen to those captured raiders. Those would-be overseers seem like the classic well-meaning but hapless committee we often see. Then we see that Vaults 31, 32 and 33 are linked together as a group, which reminds me of a question I've long wondered about. Sometimes on American news or shows, someone talks about the tri-state area or the tri-county area. How do the people in whatever county or state it is know which other two counties or states they're talking about? Do US states or counties get grouped in threes like that? Great to see that Vault-Tec model the Vault suit on the colours of Cooper's outfit. And of course, the famous thumbs up sign on his trademark move that of course he was reluctant to repeat at the start of episode one, just before the bomb. Really nicely put together all of these episodes. Meanwhile, I've been playing quite a lot of Fallout 4 on the laptop as I've been away training in Manchester. It's great to see locations I know from the game turn up in the show, and now I'm seeing locations from the show that I never realised before are in the game. It's all very circular and marvellous. Take care, Alan from England.
Hello Dave and Wayne and all listeners to Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. This is Fred from the Netherlands with my Sci-Fi TV Rewatch audio feedback number 325. About Fallout Season 1, Episode 3. Today is April 27th, our national holiday or King's Day. First off, what am I watching? I just finished this week Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It took me 5.5 years to watch that 7-season series. The series itself ran from 2013 to 2020. I started watching in 2018 and just finished it. Great, great series. Very enjoyable. And thanks once more, Dave, for your podcast together with Mike, The Sandbox. A little pity that you didn't do season 7. Was a great season, going back in time. I'm also watching Silo, after Alan from England mentioned it, and you did too. Great series. I'm at episode 7 of 10, and I already give it a straight A, and perhaps it even becomes an A+. It has some similarities with Fallout, although it's also quite different. The Vault idea is a little bit the same. As Alan said, much more focused on an inside world than an outside world, at least so far. It also gives me quite a Snowpiercer feeling, a series Wayne of course knows. Snowpiercer should get its fourth and last season soon. Furthermore, I'm watching Star Trek Discovery, just as Wayne. Okay, shortly coming back to last week's podcast, I still want to say something about 1899. You had a discussion about the craziness of streaming services like Netflix, that they cancel series just after one season, and you took 1899 as an example. Well, as I remember, as a follow-up of kind of Dark, it was quite disappointing, and Dark is called Dark, but 1899 was dark, and very literally also. So you almost couldn't see what is happening. So dark was the lightning in this series. Also, the unexplicable things in this series were stretched out too long. Okay, it's of course always nice that you have questions and it is a little bit a mystery, but that was actually stretched out too much so that it got kind of annoying. I think there were other series you could mention that it is disappointing that they didn't get a second season, like The Peripheral, for instance. Okay, let's go into Fallout. About the gore in the previous episode, I found it less than in episode 1, because in episode 1 you have the big fight in Vault 33, with a lot of casualties. And losing a foot and get an artificial foot is not so much gore for me. Gore is smashed skulls or exploding skulls, slit throats with pulsating blood coming out of it. For instance, also in this episode where Maximus is crushing the skull of that robber just by the hand of the armor suit. Concerning predictions, we did see Philly back. But, Wayne, I don't think we will see Wilsig back. And although Maximus went back to Philly, it's a pity we didn't see Ma June back. Okay, going into episode 3. I think the story with the Gulper was great. I think the Gulper is completely based on an axolotl. So that's a kind of salamander from Mexico. Although not with fingers in his mouth, but it's really based on that animal, if you just look that up. And we see here a sign, Hollywood Boulevard. So we are in the south of the US, so near Mexico, so that could also fit. Really great that when Lucy was pulled away, that she was able to load her gun and shoot at it. Also very far-sighted by Lucy to put a tracker in the head. The interaction between Thaddeus and Maximus is, of course, gold. Very nice. And you see that perhaps Maximus is not the antisocial person as you described him in the last podcast. But we will see. Great interaction as well, of course, between the Gaul and Lucy. Especially the phrases she uses towards him and they just don't land with him. She is living or coming from such another world. And indeed, it is a question if she can keep her morals up in this world. The same is true for the Vault, Vault 33. Can Norm keep up his morals, or will he do something towards the raiders, the murderers? So anyhow, looking very much forward to the next episode. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
All right, so Alan in England brings up the question whether here in the States we typically will group sections of three states at a time. And, I mean, it happens, not officially. I mean, we're part of the Delmarva Peninsula.
Right. Well, we have the Delmarva, and we also have the DMV for D.C., Maryland, Virginia. So there's two tri-state areas.
Right.
You've never seen Phineas and Ferb, so you don't. I'm sure you don't get that. But everyone who has kids will get the tri-state area reference to Phineas and Ferb there. So.
Okay. I mean, our connection to Pennsylvania is, I think, probably as strong, if not stronger, than the connection to Virginia and
right.
Delaware.
And you think there would be maybe like a little – I just think like the, what kind of catchy name, the Delpa-ma?
Well, know, like, I guess because
there's that little bit – by like Newark. Actually, no, because you go from, right? You go from, when you're going up 95, it's like Maryland, and then you're in Delaware.
Right.
And then do you hit Pennsylvania before you go into Jersey?
No, I don't think you hit Pennsylvania.
No, because it's Delaware Memorial Bridge, right?
Right.
So it's not really like per se necessarily a tri-state area like the Delmarva region or the DMV.
Right. Right. And all three of those states are on the water as opposed to Pennsylvania, which is, of course, not.
Right. See, that's why rivers, Pennsylvania can't for some. Well, actually, I guess I was because I actually looked up tri-state areas to see how many, and they're like almost every state in the United States has some kind of tri-state area. But Pennsylvania is like the Ohio, West Virginia, Western Pennsylvania region there.
Okay.
Because you have to have like a region. So, you know, it's got to be a place that like shares kind of like a culture or like in the Delmarva Peninsula, it's like economic, right? Way of like, it's where all the crabbing and the oystermen are and everything like that. And then, you know, you have like the Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio and Northern West Virginia that's like the Appalachian area there. So, but yeah, to answer your question, Alan, yes, there are lots and lots of tri-state areas in the U.S. But the best one, as I said, you can find in Phineas and Ferb.
So he brings up Norm, and I think we agree with him. It's only a matter of time before he and Stephanie make some sort of a move. I like your prediction that he may take control. I love the Lady Macbeth illusion. So, yeah. And as you say, she's already kind of started out giving him the looks that he needs to do something, and she's going to be behind him. So, now Fred mentions Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which he says he finally finished the seventh season. And I've said this many times, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is far and away my favorite Marvel offering. So,
bro.
Well, you know, I mean,
that is a crazy. That out of all the crazy, like you just said, you've never seen The Wall, but I think that's even crazier than what you said at the beginning of this thing.
Oh no, no way!
Yeah,
okay.
That Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the best thing Marvel's done.
Yeah,
oh,
I mean, I said it's my favorite.
Well, that's fine because you know that's. There's no accounting for taste, as I said.
Right, there you go. You got to say it in Latin.
You see, this is like our most coherent podcast ever. Like everything's just gelling together, man.
And she's going on and she's like breaking it down, you know, like, and finally I'm like, you know, I'm really not listening to you. And I'm, you know, I know the danger in having said it that way. She's like, so I'm nerding out too much.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, you are. So anyway, Fred brings up Silo, which you and I've both seen,
yeah.
and Fred can't wait till you finish it, get your reaction to the season end. I believe there is a season two. I think I asked this once before,
They're filming it right now.
Yeah. So
they're definitely making a season two.
That would be tragic. And then he comes back to 1899. And Fred, I understand, you know, you're the point you're making about 1899. And I guess I would have to agree
on that one, though.
Yeah. Well, right. But at least with the peripheral, I could at least read the second book. I mean, they canceled it after the peripheral.
True.
1899, I don't think there really is any source material other than, you know, the minds of Yante Frisia and Baron Bo-Odar.
Yeah, so. But what I will totally agree with Fred is that, like, visually, that was a really dark episode, like, not episode, series, that it was hard to see what was going on, and that annoyed me way more with Open Range than 1899, but that's totally valid criticism, though. So. There.
All right, anything else about any of the feedback that you
want to bring up? Well, Happy King's Day, Fred, for one.
Yeah.
I cannot agree with you about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I thought it was good. I mean, I did not like it. I enjoyed it. It was good. I just didn't think it was all that.
I guess you just didn't understand it. It was a little too deep.
That I'm not ruling out that possibility, Dave. So, but just like I don't think anyone should rule out the possibility of Will Zig's head getting plopped on top of some mechanical thing and all of a sudden he comes alive. I know that goes against a lot of actual real science and physiological stuff, but like, I don't, what's the deal with that thing in his neck? Like, maybe, I don't know. I don't know.
So I got two words for you.
Yeah.
Mary Shelley.
Right. Right. That's what I'm talking about. And I just listened to The Rest Is History last week, did a like a 3-podcast series on Lord Byron, which was pretty
fascinating. You can probably hear the thunder and lightning in the background,
yeah,
right?
I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, don't count my man Wilsig out yet.
Okay. All right. Well, Fred, Alan, Travis, thank you guys so much for the feedback. You know, I really like this. I'm going to go A- on this one. But like you always say, all right, what am I grading it down for?
Yeah. I was about to ask that.
Yeah. I don't know. So
you'll know. You're just in a grumpy mood.
Maybe. So by the time I do the show notes, maybe I'll just give it the A, because I'm assuming you want to go A.
I think I'm going to go A. Yeah. Like, again, like I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought we got some good character development. There was some good action. There was a head getting squished like a melon. Always like a good head getting squished like a melon scene. So yeah, I always look for reasons to grade things down, right? I'm like, there's like, what can I use to justify saying this is like an A-, except for just like, but sometimes you just get like a gut feeling, like, you know, I didn't enjoy this episode quite as much as the last one. And that's a thing.
Well, there is the gratuitous scene of Lucy getting wet. So, you know.
Right. See, if anything, you should then, you know, grade up, not down that day. Right. You know? So, but yeah, so I couldn't think of anything. I'm going to go with A.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. That made me think of, I've mentioned many times, my wife and I have all these kind of running, I don't, for lack of a better term, jokes that you know, this communication that we have. And so now it's like anytime we're watching a show and, you know, the couple goes into the bedroom or the couch or whatever, and they start having sex, and then, you know, it goes to black. And I will admit it started with me, but she's picked up on it as well. I'm like, well, how are we supposed to know what happened if they don't show us?
Right.
I mean, you know,
yeah,
come on.
That's a valid criticism right there, Dave.
Show me, don't tell me.
Right, show, don't tell. We say it to the kids all the time as English teachers. So,
all right. Well, I better get out of here before I say something.
Before the FCC comes after you.
Exactly. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Sci-Fi TV Rewatch. Thank you for joining us. Love to hear what you think about Fallout, Black Mirror, which we just did. You know, make sure you can track down Looper, because we'll be doing that in a month and a half or so. Check out the Facebook group if you haven't already. SciFiTVRewatch@gmail.com is the way you can reach us. We'll be back next week to talk about episode 4 of Fallout on Prime Video. But until then.
Yeah, I just, Dave, I just kind of thought about like the perfect way that we could describe the show, and maybe we could put this out in like media or something like that. It might help publicize the show. And we could say, you know, because it's subtle, flirtatious, tastes like someone touching you for the first time.